This episode of Radio Laurier's News at 9 was recorded on Monday, September 28th at around 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern, so all information given is accurate as of that time.
Welcome to Radio Laurier's News at 9, our first newscast show where we deliver you the week's breaking news every Wednesday at 9 a.m. I'm Amelia.
And I'm Jacob.
From local issues here in KW to global issues around the world, we're covering it, and we want to hear from you. Tweet us at Radio Laurier with the hashtag RLNAN with your questions or comments. Whether you're at home with your families or back in Waterloo, we hope that you've been able to adjust to all the changes brought about by the chaos of 2020. Today, we'll be doing a COVID recap, filling in any gaps you may have on how we got to this point since the first news of the virus back in January. We'll also be addressing where we are now and what the future may hold for all of us here at Laurier and beyond. On December 31st, China alerted the World Health Organization about a cluster of 41 patients who had fallen ill with a mysterious pneumonia-like disease. On January 1st, Hunan Seafood Wholesale Market closes after it's determined that most cases are linked to this specific place. Weeks later, on January 23rd, the city of Wuhan was put under quarantine, and days later, so is the entire province of Hubei. On February 19th, an outbreak of the novel coronavirus breaks out in Iran. A day later, South Korea surpasses 100 confirmed cases, and by March 4th, South Korea's daily case count begins to decline after peaking at an average of 851 cases per day. On March 9th, Italy locked down its entire population with 9,000 confirmed cases. Days later, on March 11th, the World Health Organization declares a pandemic, with a global case count of 126,000. By March 26th, the U.S. becomes the nation with the most infections globally, clocking in 100,000 cases within 24 hours. Spain reported more than 900 deaths in a single day on March 30th, and a day later, so did the United States. Now, on the Canadian front, during the first 10 days of March, Canadian cases of the virus began to climb from the importation of cases from India, the U.S., and the U.K. However, the response the Canadian government had taken in the early months of this virus leaned more towards a laissez-faire approach. At the end of February, Canadian leaders were resisting the closing of borders as other countries had done. Between the days of March 13th and March 27th, all Canadian provinces and territories declared a state of emergency in response to the pandemic. Here in Ontario, our state of emergency was declared on March 17th, 2020. To date, Canada has had around 154,000 cases, with around 132,000 of those cases being resolved, with around 9,200 deaths. Now, things had begun to cool down in the summer as we entered into phase two of the reopening plan. However, Ontario and many other Canadian provinces have been experiencing a recent uptick in cases. According to a recent article from CBC News, nearly one-third of Ontario's active cases are coming from people in their 20s. More than half of these active cases are coming from Toronto and Peel region. In recent news, with regards to COVID testing, long lines are stretching around COVID test centers Canada-wide, which health experts are attributing to the return to school. Federal Public Health told the Canadian press that they saw record demands at test sites that some people ended up being turned away. Many Canadians who cannot afford to take hours off work to wait in line for a COVID test have expressed concerns with these long wait times. Premier of Ontario Doug Ford and his government recently implemented a new testing plan where asymptomatic people can book a test ahead of time at select pharmacies in Ontario to avoid waiting in the long lines at testing centers. Dr. Isaac Bogosh, infectious disease specialist at the University of Toronto, said that this plan should lower wait times and allow for equitable testing in marginalized communities and rural areas.
Trying to sum up what has gone on in the world in the past 9 months would be nearly impossible. SARS-CoV-2, more commonly known as COVID-19, began to appear on the radar in December of 2019 with the first identification of a case in Wuhan, China. In late January, the WHO declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern, and it officially became classified as a pandemic in early March. Since then, nearly 30 million cases have been reported in 188 countries and territories across the globe, and while nearly 20 million of those cases have been resolved, just under a million people have died as well. The pandemic has gripped us all in so many different ways, and one must give some credit to the now old adage that we are currently living in uncertain times. Things that were once secure for many may no longer be. Many seem to be dreaming of life after COVID, but when that day may truly come, or if it ever will in some of the more heavily affected regions of the world, is anyone's guess. I would not be doing my due diligence as an amateur radio host if I did not tell you, the viewer, of the symptoms and what to do if you think you might have them. Common symptoms may include fever, cough, fatigue, shortness of breath or breathing difficulties, as well as loss of smell. It should be overwhelmingly obvious to all of us by this point that wearing a mask, maintaining a small bubble, and physically distancing yourself from others whenever possible, as well as generally maintaining good hygiene, are paramount in the midst of a global pandemic. But just in case you haven't heard, I'm glad that you're able to hear it now. And as always, don't take it from me. If you think you might have COVID-19, first and foremost, complete a self-assessment, which can easily be found on your local or regional government website, and follow the instructions from there. Canada, over the course of the pandemic, has seen around 155,000 confirmed cases, 132,000 recoveries, and just under 10,000 deaths. For a country of 37.5 million people, that works out to around 0.004% of the population having confirmed cases, or about one in every 25,000 people. We have certainly not fared as well as countries like Vietnam, which boasts a population about 2.5 times the size of Canada's, but has only had just over 1,000 total cases, which is less than 1% of our total cases, and only 35 total deaths. In stark contrast, we have fared far better than our neighbors to the south, who make up around 4% of the total world population, but around 22% of the world's COVID-19 cases. Ontario has seen around 50,000 total cases since the start of the pandemic. Alberta has had a slightly higher total number of confirmed cases per 100,000 people than we have, and Quebec's total is about double what ours is. But all of that pales in comparison to Nunavut, which has had a grand total of 2 confirmed cases. Waterloo region is currently seeing a spike among the young, and the current number of active cases in the region is 161. There are currently 10 active outbreaks. The number of deaths in Waterloo region remains unchanged at 120. The last death of COVID-19 in Waterloo region was reported over a month ago on August 21st. And what about a vaccine? Well, long story short, they're still working on it. As of today, there are 27 vaccines in stage 1, where safety and dosage are tested, 14 vaccines in stage 2, which involves the process of undergoing expanded safety trials, and 11 vaccines currently in stage 3, in which large-scale efficacy tests take place. Vaccines are designed to be given en masse to healthy individuals, and as such, they carry a much higher standard of safety than the sometimes experimental drugs that are given to the sick. As such, no vaccines have yet been approved for full use, but some countries have already approved some vaccines for limited use, including Russia, who skipped some crucial steps in the safety process in order to do so, such as phase 3 trials. In late August, Zheng Zhongwei, a senior Chinese health official from the National Health Commission, confirmed that certain emergency powers allowing the use of yet unapproved developmental vaccines had been enacted, which would allow border officials and workers in other areas to be given the vaccine. And what about here on campus? Well, several WLU professors and students have been contributing greatly to the research and development of various technologies related to the ongoing pandemic. Dr. Stephanie DeWitt Orr, associate professor in health sciences and biology in WLU, began working with a small team in May of this year on preclinical testing for a so-called biological mask, which involves 2 drugs that could be taken through an inhaler that would effectively make it impossible for a virus to breach our airways. Dr. DeWitt Orr's research team is also currently growing a strain of coronavirus that is similar to COVID-19 in order to determine whether or not this biological mask would be effective, and if so, what kind of dosage would be needed. In addition to the numerous Laurier experts who have given countless pieces of valuable insight across CBC, The New York Times, and more, several other Laurier faculty have been directly contributing to the global fight against the virus, such as Dr. Jonathan Crush, a professor in the School of International Policy and Governance at WLU, who was able to secure nearly $500,000 in funding from the Canadian Institutes of Health Research to study how the ongoing pandemic is affecting food security in China and how to improve food access and availability.
Throughout the course of this pandemic, we've seen it all, from bread baking to an excessive number of Zoom calls. But the one thing that is even more troubling than your coworker forgetting they don't have their pants on during a video conference is the misinformation that has been spreading throughout the course of this pandemic. Baseless conspiracy theories such as QAnon have been breaking into the mainstream throughout the course of the pandemic, and the implications of this are quite troubling.
Essentially, QAnon is an unfounded conspiracy theory that claims, among other things, that U.S. President Donald Trump is waging a secret war against the Satan-worshipping pedophilic elites who are working together in a worldwide network that is made up of governments, multinational corporations, and, of course, the mainstream media. The theory began properly in October 2017 when an individual only identified as Q posted on the anonymous image board 4chan and claimed to have classified access to information related to the Trump administration and its opponents in the United States. Since 4chan is entirely anonymized, there is no way to know who the true identity of Q is. Whoever is posting as Q uses a password-protected account that produces a unique ID called a trip code that is visible to other users. This is how 4chan users could verify that the account that was posting these so-called Q drops was the same one each time. Harvard researcher Brian Friedberg also believes that while Q began as one person, it is now reasonable to assume that multiple different people in cooperation are posting under the Q moniker.
The name itself comes from Q clearance, a high level of security clearance by the U.S. Department of Energy that allows access to top secret restricted data in the U.S. government. Laurie Siegel, reporter for CBS 60 and 6, did a deep dive on QAnon and spoke to Dustin Nemos, a popular proponent of the conspiracy theory, to get a closer look at what's going on. To give you the gist of what these QAnon supporters are saying, let's give a listen to these clips.
COVID is the biggest lie fake news has ever told.
How can you say that when you look at the numbers?
Well, I don't trust the numbers, first of all. In New York, they supposedly had hashtag warzone hospitals. I had friends and audience members going out there with their cell phones saying it's a ghost town. No one's here.
You're talking to someone who is in New York. You're talking to a crew of folks who experienced a lot of this firsthand.
Well, why were the hospitals empty when these people went there?
You saw it on YouTube. We saw it in real life.
We saw it from you. We heard your version. No offense. We don't trust you guys.
Various COVID-19 conspiracy theories have also been spread among QAnon supporters, as well as the general public. Many of these stemmed from a 26-minute-long conspiracy theory video called Plandemic that was posted online on May 4th of this year by Mickey Willis, a then-unknown film producer. The claims in this video have been fact-checked and debunked by countless scientists and researchers, but within a week, the video had racked up over 8 million views online. Many sites, including YouTube, Vimeo, and Facebook, later took the video down. But in the age of the internet, nothing is truly lost forever. The video and its claims still resonate today in conspiracy theory circles across the world. In addition, a New York Times team was able to trace the spread of the video back to a Facebook page dedicated to QAnon that was headed with the clickbait injunction, "Exclusive content must watch."
Wearing the mask literally activates your own virus. You're getting sick from your own reactivated coronavirus expressions. And if it happens to be SARS-CoV-2, then you've got a big problem.
You're not the first virologist who has told me that we're doing the exact opposite of what we should be doing to contain and to create immunity from this virus.
Why would you close the beach? You've got sequences in the soil, in the sand. You've got healing microbes in the ocean, in the salt water.
QAnon itself is centered around the idea that President Trump is fighting off the pedophilic, Satan-worshipping global elite, among other things. And when given the opportunity to dismiss the same conspiracy that brought us claims such as Hillary Clinton is currently on trial, Kamala Harris has been replaced with a body double, and Hollywood elites have been harvesting the blood of children to create a magical, life-giving elixir, Trump instead chose to say this.
During the pandemic, the QAnon movement appears to be gaining a lot of followers. Can you talk about what you think about that and what you have to say to people who are following this movement right now?
Well, I don't know much about the movement other than I understand they like me very much. Which I appreciate, but I don't know much about the movement. I have heard that it is gaining in popularity, and from what I hear, these are people that, when they watch the streets of Portland, when they watch what happened in New York City in just the last 6 or 7 months, but this was starting even 4 years ago when I came here, almost 4 years, can you believe it? These are people that don't like seeing what's going on in places like Portland and places like Chicago and New York and other cities and states. And I've heard these are people that love our country and they just don't like seeing it. So I don't know really anything about it other than they do supposedly like me. And they also would like to see problems in these areas, like especially the areas that we're talking about, go away, because there's no reason the Democrats can't run a city. And if they can't, we will send in all of the federal, whether it's troops or law enforcement, whatever they'd like, we'll send them in, we'll straighten out their problem in 24 hours or less. Okay?
Well, at the crux of the theory is this belief that you are secretly saving the world from this satanic cult of pedophiles and cannibals. Does that sound like something you are behind?
Well, I haven't heard that, but is that supposed to be a bad thing or a good thing?
Although it may seem easy to simply brush these wacky theories off, they are having real impacts on the strength of democracies and even pose a threat to the U.S. as it gets closer to the November 3rd election.
As well, dozens of QAnon supporters are running for Congress in the United States this November, one in particular being Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican nominee for Georgia's 14th congressional district, who appears to have a good chance of winning.
I'm going to tell you, I don't know who Q is, but I'm just going to tell you about it because I think it's something worth listening to and paying attention to. Okay, and the reason why is because many of the things that he has given clues about and talked about on 4chan and other forums have really proven to be true.
Greene later attempted to distance herself from QAnon, citing disinformation in the messaging. But the growing trend of conspiracy theories continues to be a major concern. In addition, according to Business Insider, at least 10 Republican congressional candidates have signaled their support for the QAnon movement. Now, I'm sure we've all had an encounter with a family member or a friend or even a stranger who's a self-proclaimed truther about what happens to be going on around the world. Me, myself, I was walking down Queen Street the other day in Toronto, and I walked by a car with, like, QAnon decals. They had the little Q, and they had, like, the WWG one, I don't remember, it's where we go one, we go all. It's like QAnon's slogan. And it was just so ridiculous seeing something that I had only seen in the news out in the real world. I took a picture with it because I thought it was so funny.
You've got to wonder who's about to get into that car too. Like, what does this yeah, person look
I'm,
like?
I'm really glad I started taking the picture and then I'm like, wait, there's no one in this car, is there? I really don't want them to see me doing this.
I know for me, I've like, there's definitely been some family members and just friends of parents who have been sending my parents information where I just absolutely
want to
rip my hair out at some of the things that they're sending. And there was one time, I think it was my dad had received the Plandemic video that we actually showed.
Oh no.
And from someone. And I fact checked it, or I read an article in The Atlantic that showed the fact checking process, that I went to the fact checker, saw that it was incorrect. This isn't true. These are false claims.
Yeah.
And my dad sent that link, the fact check link, to his friend.
Oh, no.
And later on, we get a response saying, oh, that's a Clinton fact check website. It can't be accurate. It's supported by the Clintons.
Oh, you know, those good old Clinton fact checkers. It's been crazy. I've been lucky. I haven't had any of those in my family, but I've spoken to my fair share of them at my job. Mm-hmm. It's not fun.
No.
With everything going on, it can seem kind of grim. I know for sure. So, what have you been doing to keep positive and keep your spirits up throughout all this?
Oof. I mean, for me, I love to cook. So cooking has been huge for me. Probably like every other person. I love cooking really like different things. Now it's nice that I actually have time to cook food. Cooking before was kind of a bother, especially being in school. So now it's actually nice to try out recipes and do different things. That and running, going on jogs has been really helpful for me, and just socializing at a safe distance with friends. So how about you, Jacob?
I mean, for me, I've been like, I was a Twitter junkie, and I would just spend all my time on Twitter reading news and things, and a lot of the discourse on there was just not becoming good for me. So about a month ago, I just completely deleted the app, and I don't really go on there that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I feel so much better not having this constant spread of information thrown at my face, because, you know, when you're tuned into that 24/7, it's like all you look at, all you think about, and not a lot of the discourse on there is, you know, feel good kind of stuff. So it ends up affecting your mental state. So, absolutely. You know, I deleted Twitter and like a day later, I'm like, wow, this is great. I don't feel terrible anymore. So that's, you know, disengaging from all that is what I've been doing.
That's good. That's good.
Well, thank you all for tuning in to the first episode of Radio Laurier News at 9. We'll be back next week with your weekly news update. And if you have any questions or you want to say hi, you can tweet us at Radio Laurier with the hashtag RLNAN. Once again, that's hashtag RLNAN. Have a great week, everyone, and stay safe.